Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my coat.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Hadar Orshalimi on her new album, Witchcraft, songs by Jewish women songwriters from the Great American Songbook. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at 2JewishRadio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on 2 Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. 2 Jewish is paid for by 2 Jewish radio programs and podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and 2 Jewish.
Shalom and Chag Pesach Sameach, a happy and healthy festival of Passover. This is the fourth day of Pesach, a 7 or 8 day holiday, depending on whether you are Reform or more traditional in your Jewish practice, and also depending on whether you live in Israel or not. Either way, we are in the midst of this festival now, the festival of Matzah. And I must note, Pesach is special in unique ways, even in its name or names. Allow me to explain. This holiday has no fewer than 4 official names in Jewish tradition. Chag HaPesach, or Passover, of course, for the Paschal offering, the lamb that was sacrificed and roasted in the days of the Bible and the temple, the Pesach. Chag HaMatzot, the holiday of matzah, the unleavened bread we eat for this week of Passover. Chag HaAviv, the springtime festival, probably the oldest of all the names for Passover, and most thematically, Zman Cherutenu, the season of our freedom. Each of these names is interesting in and of itself. The word Pesach itself comes from the word for leaping or jumping in Hebrew, an apt description of the ways that young lambs leap and cavort in the fields. The use of this particular animal for the sacrifice of the Passover reminds us that the angel of death leaped over the homes of the Israelites when striking the firstborn of the Egyptians. It also refreshes for us the memory of the leaping joy of freedom, the ability to move and act as we wish, that is prevented during slavery. Free people jump when they wanna. Slaves jump to somebody else's command. Hence, Chag HaPesach, the holiday of jumping. The second name for Passover is Chag HaMatzot, the festival of the poor man's bread, matzah, unleavened bread made with flour and water in 18 minutes or less from mixing to the end of baking, baked quickly and simply, food that our ancestors made as preparation for a hasty journey in flight. Of course, on Pesach, we eat matzah all week, and therefore we do not eat chametz, which is best described as the opposite of matzah, anything made with leavening or fermentation or yeast. That means we get lots of matzah, oh joy. The third name for this festival is Chag HaAviv, the holiday of springtime. Undoubtedly, there was a spring festival observed long before the events of the Exodus led to the creation of Passover. Spring is celebrated in every culture and religion. In our Seder celebrations, the orderly meals we held the first 2 nights of Passover, teaching the meaning and story of freedom in a wonderful variety of ways. Spring is featured in the green vegetables we dip in salt water, the hard-boiled egg symbolizing the rebirth of spring, the most beautiful and verdant of all seasons. And finally, the ultimate theme of Passover is freedom, Zman Cherutenu, the time of our liberation. It is this essential ideal that's woven through the week of Passover, the central focus on God's gift of liberty that has made Pesach the model freedom festival for the world. B'chol dor v'dor chayav adam lirot et atzmo k'ilu hu yatza mimitzrayim. In every generation, each one of us is obligated to see ourselves as though we personally had been brought out of Egypt, we are taught in the Haggadah. In addition to celebrating our ancestors' liberation, we also are compelled to learn compassion and empathy for the downtrodden. For when we can view ourselves as survivors of slavery, we Jews must sympathize with the dispossessed. Whichever name of this fabulous festival you favor, may you continue to be blessed with a Chag Sameach V'Kasher, a happy and healthy holiday of Passover. To play us in this fourth morning of Pesach, Passover, Chag HaMatzot, Chag HaAviv, and Zman Cheruteinu, I got all four names in there, here is a quite ridiculous anti-history song by a past guest of Two Jewish, Sean Altman, with a title that describes every major Jewish holiday from Hanukkah through Purim to Passover. They tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat.
We were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt. The year was 1492. Hitler had just invaded Poland. Madonna had just become a Jew. Moses was found on the Potomac. Then he marched with Martin Luther King. He came back to free us from our bondage, 'cause S&M has never been our thing. They tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat. They tried to kill us, we were faster on our feet. So they chase us to the border, there's a parting of the water. Tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat. Then the Pharaoh, who looked like Yul Brynner, heard the Jews were trying to escape. Charlton Heston came right down from the mountain. He said, Pharaoh, you're a damn dirty ape. The menorah was almost out of oil. Farrakhan was planning Kristallnacht. The gefilte was nearing extinction. It looked like Moses and his flock were verkocht. They tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat. They tried to kill us, we were faster on our feet. But we knew how to resist, 'cause we'd read in Schindler's List. Tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat.
Okay, that is very much not exactly how it all happened. I mean, any of it. Still, a lot of fun. Our guest this morning, Hadar Arshalimi, has recorded another fine album of songs by Jewish songwriters from the Great American Songbook. Only this time, it's Jewish women songwriters. To play us in this morning, here's her version of The Best Is Yet to Come, an optimistic way to get started this springtime morning.
Out of the tree of life, I just picked me a plum. You came along and everything started to hum. Still, it's a real good bet, the best is yet to come. The best is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine? You think you've seen the sun, but you ain't seen it shine. Wait till the warm-up's underway. Wait till our lips have met. And wait till you see that sunshine day. You ain't seen nothing yet. The best is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine? The best is yet to come. Come the day you're mine. Come the day you're mine. I'm gonna teach you to fly. We've only tasted the wine. We're gonna drink that cup dry. Wait till your charms are ripe for these arms to surround. You think you've flown before, but you ain't left the ground. Wait till you're locked in my embrace. Wait till I'll draw you near. Wait till you see that sunshine place. Ain't nothing like it here. The best is yet to come, and babe, won't it be fine? The best is yet to come, come the day you're mine.
That was The Best Is Yet to Come by our guest on Too Jewish This Morning, Hadar Arshalimi. She'll talk about her new album, Witchcraft, songs by Jewish women songwriters from the Great American Songbook. Meet Hadar on her return visit to Too Jewish when we come back in a moment.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
We welcome our guest this morning with a little of her own music.
Just in time, I found you just in time. Before you came, my time was running low. I was lost, the losing dice were tossed. My bridges all were crossed, no place to go. And now you're here, and now I know just where I'm going. No more doubt or fear, I've found my way. Your love came just in time, I found you just in time. You changed my lonely nights that lovely day.
We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Hadar Arshalimi is the wonderful artist. We've had her on once before doing the Great American Songbook from a Jewish perspective, I'd say. Her new album is called Witchcraft. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. So tell us how the idea of this particular approach to these classic songs came about.
Yeah, so after I released the first album and the first show, which is a storytelling concert called It Never Was You Jazz by Jewish Composers, where I feature songs written by Jewish writers from the Great American Songbook and the stories behind the music and behind them. So after I launched that show, which ended up happening during the pandemic, because I released the album in December of 2019, right before the pandemic broke, I was interacting live with my audiences all over the country, and I did a Q&A after the shows, and I kept getting the same question, well, when's the next album? What's going to be the next album?
Of course.
And people kept asking, oh, more Gershwin, more Hammerstein, more Kern, and while I love all of their music, I really wanted to dig a little bit deeper and see if there were any female Jewish writers that sort of dealt with the same kind of or similar kind of struggles, trying to find jobs, somehow ending in, you know, in the entertainment and ultimately dominating this art form. And so I did a little bit of digging, a little bit of research, and I found these incredible female Jewish writers that, you know, probably had to work twice as hard as their male counterparts.
I'm sure, at least.
At least, and probably didn't get credited for a lot of the work that they did, but just were complete, you know, trailblazers and just really unique in this industry. And I really wanted to highlight them, and I wanted to highlight their contribution to, you know, the most iconic songs in history. That's really where it came from.
Sure. It's extraordinary. The truth is, I didn't realize that Jewish women composers had written these songs.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of a consensus. I think a lot of people don't know it, and I really wasn't aware of it either. That's why I started, you know, doing a little bit of research about it. And I have to tell you an incredible thing that happened to me today. I actually got an email from one of the writer's sons who read Ruth Lowe. She was a Canadian writer. She wrote I'll Never Smile Again, which is on the album.
Sure.
After her husband passed away. And her son reached out to me and said he came across an article about the album and he saw that I recorded his mom's song and he was so honored and she would have been so honored. And I nearly burst into tears when I read it.
Oh, how beautiful.
So it was so cool. Yeah, it was really amazing to sort of connect through this music, you know?
What a lovely gift. And we will talk much more with Hadar Arshalimi. Her album is called Witchcraft. It's available now, and it's terrific. When we come back in a moment, here on Two Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a wonderful Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a fabulous array of services, classes, and events this spring. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. Progressive congregation in Northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and guests in our sanctuary in person. Call 520-276-5675. Religious school for school-aged children and grandchildren is available. Hebrew school, Bar and Bat Mitzvah programs, Torah Tikes experience, confirmation and teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up now. Beit Simcha services, classes, and events are open to everyone in person. Friday night services are at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning services are at 10 a.m., preceded by Torah study at 9 a.m. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Our Facebook page is Beit Simcha Tucson, BeitSimcha Tucson, and our services are available by virtual experience, too, live on our Facebook page. All of our Adult Education Academy classes and our religious school are available not only live, but also on Zoom. For more information about Beit Simcha, to come to services with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, attend our great religious school and Bar and Bat Mitzvah, Torah Tikes programs, high school, confirmation programs, and rich array of Adult Education Academy courses taught live and on Zoom, and all of our services in person and on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, at Beit Simcha, the fastest-growing Jewish congregation in all of Arizona. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18 at Gmail. That's T-O-O, JewishRadio18 at gmail.com, or visit our website, 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, 2JewishRadio.com, streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcast, Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 200,000 downloads on Podbean, and now on Spotify, too. Post a rating, review 2 Jewish wherever you listen to our podcast. Those comments help. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
And Aziz and Pesach.
And to you.
Which is a Yiddish phrase, of course, that means have a good Passover. We've been talking about Jewish communities and their vitality or whether they're challenged by some larger trends. You mentioned some communities that are really quite vital, have stayed the same or perhaps even grown, that are quite diverse, Sephardic community in Seattle, Panama City. I'm reminded of an experience I had in Israel, because one of the key factors of the kind of, I don't want to say homogenization, but of the loss of some of these unique communities. I was in Israel in Tzfat a long time ago for a Shabbat, went to what turned out to be a Chabad shul on Friday night there. They were running a retreat, so we were kind of obligated to go. Went to dinner with one of the families, and it turned out that the father was from Florence and the mother was from Yemen. And now they were living essentially a Chabad lifestyle, dressed like Eastern European Jews did years ago. And, Shabbos and, throwing in some Yiddish and stuff, even though it was from neither of their cultures. And when he told me he was from Florence, I sang a melody for him that I'd learned in the synagogue in Florence. And he lit up just, oh my goodness, like it was from his childhood. And he sang along with me and it was really beautiful. And I thought, his kids won't have that. To me, that's a loss, because that's one of the wonderful things about being able to experience a Jewish community with such richness of its historical past and bringing it into the present. So it isn't always true that these communities can hang on to what they are when they move somewhere else, or when they're involved in other,
or when they're in the same place,
or in the same place.
Anyway, the point I tried to make last week, and I'll restate it very briefly, is that not all the Jewish communities in the Arab world moved to Israel. They moved to lots of other places as well. And they are basically extinct where they used to be, like Syria, Iraq, Libya. There are countless examples, sadly. So if you talk about a Libyan Jewish community, you have to look to Rome in particular, where the Libyans have a vital and strong identity and communal life and existence. I don't think they're remotely affected by Chabad or by Israel. And the Egyptian Jews have basically done the same thing in Milano. For whatever reason, the Egyptians went to Milan, the Libyans went to Rome. But there they are, and they're not in Israel.
Okay.
That's first point. Second point is the role of Chabad is, I think, varied depending on where you are. And most of the places I've been, Jewish life was either extinct or on the verge of extinction. And I don't go to Chabad Shabbat or services or whatever in Western countries, which have large, thriving Jewish communities of their own. So I don't really know what effect Chabad has there. I go in places where the Jewish community is hanging by a thread. And what I've seen in these places is that if the Chabad Shaliach wants to be successful, he is going to find every shred of common ground, of sort of common memory of what's left of a Jewish community. Or he's going to build a new Jewish community, but with respect to local pronunciation, local customs, local foods, and all that. So that going to a Chabad service in Montenegro, for example, or in Latvia, is not at all the same as going to a Chabad service here in Tucson.
And I understand that can be the experience. I will say I've been to Chabad services in the ghetto of Venice and in Morocco and in Sydney, Australia, and in Cusco, Peru, and in Shanghai, and they were not terribly different. I mean, they weren't different at all from the experience I would have had in Los Angeles or New York or
Chicago. I can
totally
believe that, but I'm also happy to say that I've never been to Chabad in any of those places.
Tom, thanks very much. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. And this one is a Pesach classic. A blind man is sitting on a park bench during Pesach. The rabbi sits down next to him, takes out his lunch, including, of course, some Passover matzah. Seeing the blind man has nothing to eat and taking pity on him, the rabbi takes a piece of matzah and gives it to the blind man. Several minutes later, the blind man turns, taps the rabbi on the shoulder, and asks, "Who wrote this junk?" Yes, that was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Two Jewish just for you. You should live and be well, especially on Passover. And now a word of Torah. This week's portion, Shmini, third in the book of Leviticus, includes a very dramatic and traumatic event. The tabernacle in the wilderness has just been consecrated, and the priests, Moses' brother Aaron and his sons, are beginning their service there. God's presence fills the tabernacle, and all is right with the people and apparently the world. Then, suddenly, disaster strikes. Aaron's eldest sons, newly ordained priests named Nadav and Avihu, offer Esh Zarah, strange fire, to the Lord. They are immediately struck down and devoured by divine flame, dying before God. In the aftermath of this tragic shock, Moses consoles Aaron with peculiar words. God says, "By those brought near to me, I am consecrated and honored before the people." There is no mention of whether Aaron accepted this as a just ending for his sons. The text merely says, "Vayidom Aharon." Aaron was silent. We don't know the young priest's offense, or offenses, if there were any. We are not told what the strange fire was. God decrees atonement offerings are made for whatever sin the young men committed, and the people are restored to God's favor. There is no further explanation in the Torah, although the rabbis later create a variety of possible explanations for this disaster. Perhaps the young men were drunk, or they offered sacrifices that weren't ordered by God, or they were actually engaged in some form of idolatry, or they were too arrogant and usurped their father's place. But the truth is that we just don't know why they died. Of course, that's not just true in the Torah. We also do not know why most tragedies take place in our own lives, or why terrible things sometimes happen to good people. As Ben Sirach says in the text Ecclesiasticus from the Apocrypha of the Hebrew Bible, we have been shown more than we can understand. God keeps the rationale private. We just don't know, and likely won't know. So, what do we know? Well, we do know that Aaron's silence may be the only real response to profound tragedy and loss. Our own comfort and consolation may come only when we silently acknowledge our own powerlessness. This seems small comfort indeed, but it is also an honest appraisal of our ability to comprehend profound loss. May God keep us from tragedy, but may God also give us the strength of Aaron when we have to face it, the ability to accept the painful inadequacy of our own explanations with dignity and courage. When we come back in a moment, our guest this morning, Adar Arshalimi, discusses how she chose the songs for her great new album, Witchcraft, and the remarkable prevalence of Jewish women's songwriters and fine ones. All of that when we return in a moment on Two Jewish.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
After an incredibly calm beginning to Ramadan in Israel, the most peaceful start to the Muslim holy period in years, there was lots of trouble last week in several locations around Israel. It began with a confrontation in Jerusalem on the Temple Mount. Rock-throwing Palestinians added fireworks to their arsenal and barricaded themselves into the third holiest mosque in the world in Islam. Israeli police moved against them at the Al-Aqsa Mosque and, well, trouble ensued. The Palestinians were upset, as they are annually, that an extremist Jewish sect tried to bring goats up to the Temple Mount to perform the Pesach sacrifice. No word on why goats instead of lambs, but their determined efforts were completely and consistently thwarted by Israeli police long before they got close to the Temple Mount. Still, after evening prayers on several nights last week, young male Palestinians barricaded themselves into the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, where they had amassed a store of stones and fireworks. Last year on Pesach, a group of Palestinian young men threw stones from the Temple Mount area 50 feet down onto Jewish worshippers. Apparently, the plan this year was that at dawn, when Jewish worshippers arrived at the Kotel, the Western Wall, immediately below the Temple Mount, Palestinians would rain stones and fireworks down upon them. Israeli police broke down the barricaded doors of Al-Aqsa, and using tear gas and stun grenades, they arrested the rock and firework-throwing group. The detainees were taken away from the Temple Mount and Jerusalem and released without charges, but were banned from returning to Al-Aqsa. The clashes between police and demonstrators were filmed and put up as TikTok videos, of course. All of this led to protests in various cities in Israel, including Haifa and Umm al-Fahm, which included more confrontations with Israeli police. And the Temple Mount trouble gave Hamas the excuse to fire rockets from Gaza into southern Israel. Those rockets were all shut down or landed in open areas. Next, more rockets and some mortars were fired from Lebanon into northern Israel. Whether they came from Hezbollah or Palestinian groups in Lebanon is not yet clear. There were no Israeli injuries. The Israeli police action of breaking into Al-Aqsa to proactively prevent rock and fireworks being rained down on those praying at the Western Wall was condemned harshly by Jordan, among other countries. In an unusual arrangement, although the old city of Jerusalem has been in Israeli hands since 1967, Jordan technically still has authority over the Temple Mount through the Muslim Waqif, a religious official appointed by the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan. The Waqif is typically an anti-Israel and often anti-Semitic extremist Muslim cleric, but Israeli police protect him and Jordanian sovereignty over the Temple Mount. Har HaBayit, the Temple Mount to Jews, and at least theoretically the holiest place on earth for us, is called the sacred precinct by Muslims. It's the same place. It is also among their holiest places. Frankly, it should be sacred to Christians as well, although they don't really figure into these clashes. Look, this sort of trouble is nothing new at the Temple Mount. We can only hope that the violence is limited and contained. I've been in Jerusalem during Ramadan on several occasions, and the tension then can be palpable. Jews are not allowed to go up on Har HaBayit at all during times of heightened tension. Muslim worshippers during the holy month, who fast during the daytime and eat only at night, must pass through metal detectors in order to enter the Temple Mount and the Mosque of Al-Aqsa for prayer. There is often a huge line of Muslim worshippers waiting to get onto the Temple Mount at prayer time, and you can feel the resentment. Apparently, some hotheads have managed to get fireworks through the Israeli metal detectors. Rocks are easy to come by, even on the mount itself, and of course, they will probably pass through metal detectors, no problem, too. In any case, this sort of tsuris in the past has sometimes exploded into actual widespread rioting. The Second Intifada, now 20 years ago or so, began as the Temple Mount Intifada, or uprising, and it was catalyzed by issues related to Har HaBayit, the Temple Mount, and its environs. Our hope is that this will burn out quickly, as most subsequent tensions have. But it's mostly that, a hope. I have lived in Israel and traveled there many times. When I am in Jerusalem with a tour group I am leading, for example, I will always try to go up on the Temple Mount. Usually, Israeli police do not allow Jews to go up, even rational Jews who have no desire to sacrifice a goat on that plateau, out of concern that the tensions are too high and it might prove to be dangerous to everyone, you know, public safety. But occasionally, things are so calm that you can just go up on Har HaBayit and see the Dome of the Rock and the general area where the Great Temple once stood. Sometimes there's no tension at all. It seems perfectly peaceful. Sometimes there's a little tension, perhaps an ugly remark made to somebody in the group. And sometimes you can feel the tension when you even suggest to the Israeli guards that you might want to visit Har HaBayit. I don't really believe that anything dramatic has changed there, or that it will change, no matter which Israeli government is in office. It's just that this Israeli government is so much easier for most of the world to condemn than a less reactive and harsh government would be. Let's all pray for peace to return speedily and soon to Jerusalem and the rest of Israel on this Pesach holiday and in the weeks to come. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation, known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. To welcome back our guest, here's a little of her rendition of the classic, The Party's Over.
The party's over. It's time to call it a day. No matter how you pretend, you knew it would end this way. It's time to wind up the masquerade. Just make your mind.
Welcome back to Two Jewish. Our guest this morning, Hadar Arshalimi, is a return guest. She's done just a wonderful job of recording songs, Jewish composed and written songs from the American Jewish Songbook. Her new album is called Witchcraft, which is songs written by Jewish women songwriters in the great classic set of songs that we think of as, boy, so integral to the development of American music, I should say. Were you aware that these songs had been written by women when you started to explore this project?
I was not aware. I did not know that. And, you know, the funny thing was, the first thing I did was look up female Jewish writers of the Great American Songbook. And then I saw all these songs I knew, like, you know, The Way You Look Tonight, Willow Weep For Me, Party's Over, Some Other Time, which was written with Bernstein. Incredible songs that I knew, you know, I'd heard before, but then I didn't realize that, you know, they were written either completely or partially by female Jewish writers, which is very cool.
In creating this, you know, these are all great songs, right? Did you feel that there was any structural difference in the kinds of songs that women composers wrote?
Yeah, so... that's actually a very interesting question. So a lot of these writers were actually lyricists. So that was one thing that I noticed that was interesting. A lot of the times the composers were male and the lyricists were female, except for there were a few, like who I just mentioned, Ruth Lowe, and I want to say Caroline Lee as well. I'm sorry. Ruth Lowe and Anne Ronald. The two of them wrote both lyrics and music, which was unheard of at the time. I believe Anne Ronald was the first one to do that, actually. So structurally, I would say they were the lyrical driven of the, you know, lyrical element of the song, the one that was like driving the song lyrically. But it was also interesting because some of them did music and lyrics as well, and that's a whole other process of writing. You know, one is, oh, I have this melody. You know, what kind of emotions is this moving you? And then you go on and write the lyrics, or vice versa. And the other is, I'm hearing this, you know, all together. The lyrics and the music are coming to me at once. A completely different experience of writing as a songwriter myself, I know. So, you know, I think there was definitely a difference in that respect. And I also want to say that there was a lot of sort of vulnerability, but toughness in a lot of their lyrics. And I think that was by the nature of who they were, female Jewish writers in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, where that was just not acceptable.
Can you give us an example of that in a lyric that was a little grittier than
Willow Weep for Me,
yeah.
Yeah, so for example, that was an Anne Ronald song, and they told her that song was just not appropriate for not poppy enough, not contemporary enough, that, you know, the lyrics were just like a little bit more edgier. And then, believe, that song went on to being recorded 800 times. yep.
I hope she made up for it in royalties.
She really did. Yeah, it was just like, there was a lot of that, actually. There was a lot of, this is not going to work for A, B, and C reason, and they just didn't give up and kept pushing forward. And then she got it recorded 800 times, you know, so.
Well, I mean, every one of these is a classic, right? You know, the best is yet to come. Fairy tales can come true if it happens. It can happen to you if you're young at heart, right? Or
Exactly. And you know, by the way, that the best is yet to come was engraved on Sinatra's tombstone.
I did know that. Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool.
So I'll tell you a quick story about Sinatra. I was participating in a Cantor's concert once in Palm Springs about a million years ago. And we were waiting to go up on the pulpit to do our various pieces in the concert. And I looked at the seat in front of me. It had been donated by Frank and Nancy Sinatra.
Oh, my goodness.
And I thought,
that's so cool.
That's a good Catholic who had a lot of Jewish friends, you know.
That's funny. Yeah, of course. I mean, all these writers. I think it was. I keep coming back to Ruth Lowe, but I have a lot to say about.
I think it's fascinating because, you know, the truth is, on the last album that you did, It Never Was You. There are so many wonderful songs, but we're familiar with the names of a lot of those great songwriters, Sammy Kahn
and
Lawrence Hart and so forth. That's not so true with these women songwriters.
Right. Agreed. Yep. And a lot of people ask me, oh, no, I didn't know there were Jewish female songwriters in the Great American Songbook. I'm like, well, Dorothy Fields wrote 400 songs.
Yeah, she did okay for herself.
So that was that. And Betty Comden, you know,
Betty Comden and Adolph Green, right?
Yeah, so they were.
And by the way, Comden was first. I don't think that was just alphabetical.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know, that's true. But yeah, they were both probably the most well-known female Jewish writers in this art form, but they all.
But you're talking about the Canadian writer. If you could talk some more about her.
Ruth Lowe. So she, I can't remember why I'd mentioned her a minute ago, but she.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. She lost her. She met this wonderful guy when she was 23 years old, I think she was about 23 years old. The biggest love of her life, and he passed away about a year into their marriage, and she was devastated. I think her father was actually in the hospital. She lost her father and her husband around the same time, I don't remember exactly. And she was devastated, and she very shortly after wrote the song I'll Never Smile Again. And I think she originally gave it to Tommy Dorsey's band and he passed on it at first, but then heard a different arrangement of it and decided, oh, maybe this will be appropriate for my new artist, Frank Sinatra, and gave it to Frank Sinatra, and it became his first number one hit to ever, it became his first number one hit, and then it charted as number one hit on the very first ever national list of best-selling retail records, as in ever, like the first.
Like the very first, the first top whatever, yeah.
Yeah, and then it stayed on that chart for 12 weeks, you know, so. And then, if I remember correctly, a couple of years after that, she wrote another song for Sinatra called Put Your Dreams Away for Another Day, which was just another huge song for him. And I believe it was the last song that was played at his funeral. So they had a very strong connection. And then also after she passed away, I think it was after she passed away, her because of this song, that was one of the reasons to create the Canadian Songwriters Hall of Fame. So she contributes to that as well.
So would you say she was responsible for the Canadian Songwriters Hall of Fame?
I don't know if she's responsible for it. I just know that her success has been credited for the creation of the Canadian. So
that's very cool.
So maybe, yeah. They were amazing. They really were amazing. Emmys, Grammys, Tonys, Oscars, all of them. They all, you know, were either nominated or won, or several.
What was the biggest surprise in putting together this collection for this remarkable album?
Yes, I think it really was, maybe I wouldn't call it a surprise, just kind of like a highlighting something that I assumed, was that they just had to really work way harder. Some of them, like Dorothy Fields, her father, Lou Fields, who was in the entertainment, didn't want her to work in this industry and did everything in his power to prevent her from doing that. Caroline Lee grew up in a poor Jewish family and was working secretarial jobs on the side as she was trying to figure out a way to write songs. And then one time had dialed a wrong number and on the other line ended up with Sunbeam Music. And the next thing you know, she secures herself songwriting deal, and 2 years later she writes one of Sinatra's bigger hits. So I think it's just that they were just so tough and so resilient, and like I said, Anne Ronald, they told her this song ain't going nowhere, went to be recorded 800 times. I think they just were as resilient as it comes. It's not surprising to me because it's sort of obvious that you need to be resilient in this industry in general, and then add to that being, you know, Jewish in a time where people like my grandmother couldn't get a job at Ford. Where like jobs were not a very easy thing to get for Jewish people. And now add to that, being a woman, going against social norms and at times against, you know, your parents' wishes. I was just reminded of how tough they had to have been and how resilient. And, you know, just not giving up. I think that was really the thing that stood up the most about these women's stories.
You know, I have to a confession. A million years ago, when I was 21 years old, I did On the Town in a production at a synagogue.
Yes.
And some other time, and I just thought of it as a Leonard Bernstein song, right? But of course, not only Betty Comden, but I guess Nancy Walker is also credited on this song. Is that correct?
I don't know that. I just saw that it was Bernstein.
And Comden and Green.
And Green, yeah. Yeah, and Green and Betty Comden. That's what I found, but that was one resource that I was able to find. But yeah, that song, I mean, it's very Bernstein-ish because of that tritone.
Yeah. Da 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 ya da 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 dee da da da. Yeah, very, very, very Leonard Bernstein.
It's very Leonard Bernstein. But the lyrics, like to me, actually, I was, you know, one of the things that we vocalists do, we look for different recordings, we listen, we try to sort of find ourselves in the music, but we also take, you know, like we use different artists as muses. And I had a hard time finding a recording that, like, I fell in love with the song immediately, and I think it was actually the Tony Bennett version that I heard first that I fell in love with. But it was, I had a hard time finding a recording that I was like, this is how I'm feeling this song. And if you listen to the take on my album, it's very different than anything that I was able to find. And the thing that was like driving for me in that song, aside from the absolutely stunning melody, was the lyrics. The lyrics like literally like punctured my heart.
Oh.
I just, you know, the sort of like, where is the time all gone to? Haven't done half the things we want
we
to.
Haven't done half the things we want to. Right.
Yeah,
no, it's a great.
Yeah. And I think as getting older and having a daughter of my own now, it's this sort of like, okay, well, you know, touring like I used to, it's just not going to happen anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, well. You know, it's sort of like, yep, life kind of changes, and there's this like bittersweet, beautiful achingness in it, you know? So it's a beautifully musical song, but the lyrics to me are what like really evoke the emotion in this song.
Well, I don't want to say the party's over, another one of the great songs on this album, but we're out of time. Hadar, where can people go to find your album, to download it, and to find out more about you?
Yeah, so if you go to hadarmusic.com, you can download and listen to the album, and you can purchase it there, and you can stream it there. And of course, it's also available on all streaming websites, Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, YouTube, and so on and so forth. It's everywhere there is internet. But definitely check out hadarmusic.com. And if you join my mailing list, I will send you a free recording of a song. So make sure you do that as well on our website.
Thank you so much. It's great to have you here. Chag Sameach, a happy Pesach.
Thank you, Chag Sameach. You too. I so appreciate this. And I hope to be back soon.
Our pleasure. We look forward to everything you do. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be comedian Gianmarco Ceresi, Jewish and Italian. It's a fun combination. And please join us at Congregation Beit Simcha every Friday night for services and Onig Shabbat at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning, too, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading and Kiddush, live in person and available on our Facebook page. Our playout this morning is from 6:13. Their tribute to the classic animated version of the Exodus story, The Prince of Egypt, with music composed by a past guest of Too Jewish, the great composer Stephen Schwartz. My friends, have a Chag Sameach V'Kasher, a happy and kosher Passover, a Zisen Pesach, a lovely Passover, and a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly of peace.
There can be miracles.
sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.